Hi, I'm Maria Walsh, and you're listening to the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, what a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
And welcome to the fourth episode of the Breffni Early Show. And I'm really excited about this week's guest. We're joined by none other than the 2014 International Rose of Tralee, Miss Maria Walsh. Maria, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
The pleasure.
Four is obviously the best.
Yeah, well, I know three or four people who might disagree with you on that one, but we'll go with that. We'll go with your perception of things. We're going to talk about a whole range of things. Obviously, you're very much in the public eye over the last 18 months or so since you were crowned in the Dome back in, I suppose, August 2014. How has that all sunk in yet? I suppose more importantly, how has the after the rose thing sunk in for you?
Yeah, it's you know, it's very normal. I mean, you're fortunate you got to meet my parents and my family, so there's nothing normal about your parents. Yeah, I always say when people meet my parents, I make more sense, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I tell them it's a good thing. No, but there's no airs and graces, particularly in our life. So my feet were always very firmly on the ground, even throughout such a great year, such as the Rose of Tralee. Posted, it's kind of figuring out what's next and what's happening and moving and shaking and relocating back to the Emerald Isle in the great county of Mayo. I think I'm in like 5 seconds on the show and I got my up Mayo dancing.
It's about a minute, to be fair. But we're actually sitting here in your home, which is going to cause a bit of controversy now because we're not actually in Mayo right now.
No, technically we are.
Really?
So there's a little bit of a planning issue going on at the moment.
I'm so glad you highlighted.
Listen, things happen daily to people, and this thing I'm very much sticking with. I was trying to get all serious there, but it wasn't working out. So Shrew River technically runs under the house.
Okay.
By planning legislation, should our house be built? No. Is the river there? We don't know. Who's gonna dig in our house? So I say, you say, and we, yeah, true. Anyways. I'm a proud Mayo.
I'm glad we've got that issue and got it out of the way. Nice and early. We're not allowed any Mayo for Sam outbursts, by the way.
No, I'll try.
We're going to talk about Maria Walsh, the Nipper, first. Mm-hmm. And I want to start kind of through school and through university.
This is probably where I should bring in my family members to really comment. I'm actually very much the same, I think, as I am now. My core values haven't changed. I'm very much a people person, hardworking. I'm a bit of a cool weirdo, as I like to tell young people. I made a pledge to become a pioneer, so I abstained from alcohol and other substances when I was 12. And a lot of that was...
Me too.
Oh, you're a pioneer too. I forget
about
that.
Well, I'm not a pioneer per se.
But you just don't drink.
I have never had a drink. Yeah. But it's not a religious thing
It's
just a personal choice.
And a lot of that, I mean, a lot of the personal decision making was for the pioneers and was for me too. I just really enjoyed the committee that was a part of the Pioneer Association. So that's kind of why I just went down that route. But so when that, I made that decision when I was 12, and it always made sense to me because I was so heavily involved in sports and my parents are very involved in the community. So you would have seen our family at Churchgate Collections every Saturday and Sunday down the community centre.
Is that how you built the house on top of the river?
Yeah. It's all about... Okay, I was going to say something politically incorrect, but I won't. So then that's the environment I grew up in. So any life choices around my teenage years was kind of surrounded by that. But I started working when I was 12 in a Listana guest house over the road. And my proudest hour... That's technically in Galway. My proudest hour is when my first day was 10 hours and I came home going, I have to go into work tomorrow. Like, they're expecting me to come into work. I have to work very hard. And I remember my dad
10 hours on your first day at 12 years of age.
And I remember my dad saying, you know, like, you don't have to work. And I go, no, I must work, Vincent. I have to provide for myself. So
at 12.
Yeah. So
that's a very mature outlook.
Yeah. So my work ethic was always there, which a lot of people would have seen throughout the Rose year, where most people would know me of now. But no, I was tongue in cheek. Definitely talked my way out of, definitely had the plomos in me, because I talked my way out of, you'd get detention if you didn't hand in an absent note. And I only would be absent for like dentist appointments or something, because I love school. But I always plomos my way out of that.
Are you sure you're actually the cool person? Because none of this sounds, you don't drink, you like school.
I love school. I loved it for the banter. I wasn't the greatest student. I was like in BCs, but I got by. I plomosed my way through high school. And then sports, because if you weren't in, then you couldn't play football or soccer, and I didn't really want to miss training. So I love that element of it, but no, I was pretty much the same. I was really cheeky.
People might not be that aware that you actually were a big football head growing up. You played a lot of sports. I know, even just looking around your home, there's pictures of you with plenty of people from around the area.
See, I love how you say that, because we're going to also talk about something else completely off topic, but then I'll get back to it. So currently we're in my house right now.
Yes.
This photograph that you see over yonder, you can't really see it right now. However, it's the first official photograph of me being the Rose Tree in my home. There is no other photographs of me as Rose Tree in my own house. Isn't that disgraceful?
Yes and no, because it's only one part of your life.
Yeah, but my mother should have a photo of me up, right? Of all the great memories that we've had. But out of principle, she refuses to, because I make so many jokes about it, she refuses to put a picture up. So I don't know what's going on. Obviously, someone put that up.
Well, from a personal point of view, I have no sympathy for you, because in my home, I have two sisters, and their two graduation pictures are up on the wall at home. I didn't quite graduate college. I took the scenic route and opted out. And it took for me cycling around the world to get my picture up on the same shelf. Everyone else in the family had one for years. And then for me...
See, I don't feel bad for you either, because they marked a notable time in your life.
But you said there is one of you in the house.
Now. That only went up like within the last 24 hours.
Well, the last
and
time...
more than likely because they heard you were coming, so they're like, we have to make reference.
But the last time I was here, there was a picture of you from your school days with football team.
Oh, yeah. So in when I was 16, in junior cert, took junior cert not seriously, because we were trying to win the under-18 All-Ireland Soccer Ladies Final. And we did. Great time. First time the school, PCH, had won in 51 years. It was huge. Huge turnout, huge support. And then this is where the real Maria Walsh comes in. So a couple of weeks after us winning, again, first time we had won any All-Ireland for the school in 51 years. I just really want to make sure the listeners know that, because then it doesn't seem like I'm a cray-cray girl with my next story. A couple of teachers organized for a bunch of the guys to go to Old Trafford as a congratulations for a great sporting year. None of us females were invited. # burn the bras, feminists. Here we go.
Is this where the whole feminist thing started? Yeah,
this is where the whole kickoff. No, I was all about equality back in the day. So I went into one of my teachers, Mr. O'Connor, who was the main man I had found out had organized this Old Trafford visit. And I walked in and I slammed the door and I was so outraged. And I basically, this is me in junior cert, I tore him and like I screamed at him from a height and how disrespectful and how irate I was and how, unrepresented we were and how the audacity. I mean, these words were coming out of me like, I was like, I don't even know what half these words mean, but they sound great. And then I walked out of the room, didn't even give him a chance to reply. And I always remember him sitting behind his deck, and the pen dropped when I said my first F word. And he was like, Maria.
Oh, you used the F word?
Oh, yeah. He was like, I tore him a new one. Not the most likely like the terms, but that's what happened.
There is something nice about telling a teacher.
How I didn't get detention was beyond me. But
well, because, yeah, I'm not going to go into it in depth now, but I'll tell you off the recorder in a few minutes, but I used the F-bomb on my vice principal once and it got me out of the situation I was in at the time.
Nice.
So it was really, really good.
I wouldn't recommend that. Any young people listening to this. There's terms and conditions applied to.
I've got a 14-year-old nephew in junior center. Do not listen to this advice. It will not end pleasant for you in 99% of situations. So you came through PCH. You mm-hmm.
You won the All-Ireland. Things were fantastic. You went to university. Galway, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I went to Griffith College in Dublin.
Okay.
So actually, no, I take that back, actually. You do have your research done on me. After I did my leaving cert, I didn't actually succeed as much as I wanted to. I was planning on doing nursing, or I was in two realms because I was always doing PR and journalism for youth groups like No Name Club and Pioneers. But I really wanted to work with people. So I was like, well, I can only do work with people, and I think that would be great. And I actually failed biology. So if you fail biology, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot apply or be accepted into any university in Ireland for nursing, naturally.
It's kind of a basic requirement.
Yeah. May I point out that my biology paper was very much about photosynthesis and all these green things, which, given that I'm a farmer background, I should know. However, Shinné, we've moved on. I've gotten over that. But then I said, right, well, I remember I received my junior cert results. I didn't do as great as I wanted to. Biology was a big fail. And I thought, okay, what do I do next? So I applied and I did intro to nursing in GTI in Galway and fell in love with the course, got distinctions and all through. And actually, based on personality and work experience that I did in the nursing home in Ballinrobe in County Mayo, and my love of the course, I got accepted into Thames Valley University in London for nursing. And I always love to tell that story, particularly with young people, because there's always a way around. It just might take a little bit longer. But then I got more heavily involved on that other note onto writing and PR and stuff. And then I decided, you know, let me try Griffith for 3 years for journalism specific and see and get that bug out of my brain. And I knew I had deferred my course in Thames Valley, so if after 1 year I didn't like journalism, then I always had that backup, but at least I had never had a shoulda woulda coulda. And I fell in love with it, and then I insert the underdogs into my life.
Yeah, so the underdogs is a TG Cahir program, which is an Irish language program in Ireland, where they took a group of originally men who hadn't played county football, and then it became, I think, the third season they went for women, or the fourth season maybe, they went for women who hadn't played senior inter-county football, which included probably a fair chunk of the country, to play against the All-Ireland champions, who I believe were Cork at the time.
Yeah, so yeah, no, you're dead right. So
I was at the game, I remember.
We were the third.
I couldn't pick you out of the lineup from that game, but I was at the match.
I was okay with you saying that. So the premise is, as you'd said, they did 3 years of men, 2 years football, 1 year of hurling, and then they introduced women. And I got onto the panel and loved it. Like, the premise is, as you said, you could have played junior county or underage county, but you could have never played senior county championship. And I thought it was such a great initiative, because there's so many county stars, say for instance Mayo, that people would never have seen or would have never heard of, or like there's a number of Dublin in particular, a number of the girls, Circa Furlong, who was captain of this year's Dublin team, I think, was on the underdogs the second year and proved herself so well, got onto the senior county team and just developed from there, and then doing phenomenally well. And you have that a lot of success stories. Kieran Donnelly is probably the greatest thing from the men's section of the underdogs. And I don't really need to introduce Kieran Donnelly, because if you're in the football world, you know that name.
Yeah, but
instantly.
For maybe people outside Ireland, he is one of the footballer of the year.
Yeah.
I think about 6-7 years ago, and he's been a stalwart in the Kerry team over the last 7-8 years. So he's.
If you're from Mayo, you dislike
him.
You dislike his footballing abilities.
It's okay to say hate. It's fine in those instances. Being Mayo and being 60-odd years since you've won the All Ireland, will we mention that again?
No. But yeah, so I worked really hard for it, and unfortunately, I got injured very, very well. I do things very well, you see, particularly when it comes to injury. And I started tearing my groin a little bit over the training sessions and over the months. And so I would have started training with the girls in May, done all the productions and stuff like that. And then in November, I got, maybe actually end of October, I got kicked off because I tore my groin clean off the bone just from overplaying and just being stupid about rehab and all that, those great things. Met a mutual friend of ours on that, Eamon Murharty, and that's how he became one of my greatest friends.
You off the team.
Yeah, and I was devastated because you work so hard, and I always wanted to prove myself. And when I got kicked off of it, it was so devastating. Kicked off it from injury is one thing, but you're still, oh no, just ice it, bag it, do whatever you need to do to make I only had a couple more weeks before the final game against Cork, but my body couldn't take it. It was like, and we're shut down now. And how it all happened is this ball came in. I knew I was going to rip it really bad in this one particular game. Ball came in, a nippy corner forward went down. I went down, tried to, you know, like flick it off her hand. And she jumped up a little bit, half second before me. And as I got up, we were like intertwined almost in arms. And I just...
You heard it gone.
Yeah, so I did my hop along. If anybody could see me now, I'm doing a hop along movement.
They can't see it. It's a podcast. It's
yeah, and then I was trying to describe. And then I was, so I was really devastated. But how my TV career built outside of that was really down to those moments. Because when we weren't filming for training or the underdogs, I have this natural tendency to kind of evolve myself in other people's work. So if cameramen needed crew moved, I'm like, oh yeah, here, I'll help you, because we weren't doing anything and I hate sitting idle. It really bores me. So I almost became player / production assistant on some of the shows. So when I did get evicted, the production company called me and was like the next day and go, hey, so I know you're injured and all, but you interested in being a PA for the next couple of weeks? We kind of need someone around making teas and coffees. And that is how my media career began.
It's kind of a cool story. So how did you go from there to running a fashion house in Philadelphia?
So very long-winded story, but sure, I'm good for the old chats. So I worked with the Dare Productions on a couple of more productions. I met a production manager called Sheila Meany, who then brought me on to RT Fulcher Castle, Fulcher House. I went in with Shinawil, Adair.
The Fulcher Towers, was it?
Fulcher Towers, thank you very much. Yeah. Castle Bellingham for 2.5 weeks.
I just remember Paddy McKenna used to do the end.
Yeah.
I remember watching at the time.
And then I kind of went, kind of just really worked hard, made great teas and coffees.
Make great tea, by
any
way.
Any of the grunt work that needed to be done, but that's how you kind of build a name and that's how you connect with a lot of production houses and camera crew and sound men. And I just worked, and I remember, don't sit idle. If you sit down, things haven't been done and you need to keep proving yourself. And then I worked with Indemol and Deal or No Deal. And in Indemol, the year of that, post college, I worked on Shinawil's The Apprentice season 2, met more people, came on to Deal or No Deal. And then I met a researcher who, we were just talking about New York, and given I was born in the States, I always kind of wanted to make my way back and wanted to take a chunk out of the Big Apple, knowing I only wanted to do it for 2 years and then get out. She introduced me to a woman that was CEO for AR New York, an advertising firm, and then finished with Deal or No Deal and had about 2 weeks, and they offered me a job, and I was like, great, I'll come out as a creative coordinator. And 2 weeks I was on the plane and out.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool, and it happened quite fast. But I remember my production manager at the time, Sheila Meany, saying to me, I don't understand why you're leaving. You could become a big fish in a small pond, or you're going to become a small fish in a big pond, and you need to make sure what you're doing is right. But
you're just looking for a place to grow, basically.
Yeah, and I just really want to get my arse kicked in New York, and that's kind of all I had on my agenda. And I knew if I got out there, I knew the moment I landed in JFK, it was like 2 years and then I'm out the door. And that's all I wanted. I just wanted to learn what a number meant and all of those things that I think you need to learn in a big city.
How did you find like that? Because obviously we're looking here, I'm looking at your windows of your home here, and I can barely see another house.
Yeah.
To where New York, you couldn't put, like, there'd be 100 people in this room that we're in, on the streets. How did you find, like, moving from Shrewel to the likes of Times Square?
Yeah, and it, you know what, the big cities, because a lot of people are like, oh, you left New York because it was just too big for you, which was really not the case. I love New York. I thought it was great. I just didn't love it's BS enough for me to stay in it. And you become wrapped up in just that daily gray grind that you find only in big cities like New York. There's no other city like New York. I think I would highly recommend everybody to move there at least for a year and really know what it's like to city struggle you know, I don't want to say struggle, but it's a tough city to make friends and get a group in. I guess I always just wanted to try it. So moving there and having avenues and Broadways and Times Squares and all sorts of things never really fazed me. I lived in Queens, in Sunnyside, as most Irish did. Worked in Soho. So I was kind of down in the hump of it. But AR New York kind of opened my eyes then to photographers. And bear in mind, these photographers are like the Steven Meisels of the world, the Inés Invenut, the Mikael Janssens, the Annie Leibovitz, like these very, very top 10 photographers that you see shooting any of the fashion label campaigns and luxurious goods throughout the world. So my eyes began to open up to all of that. And I somehow managed to create a little community within AR New York. And then I decided, okay, let's move on. And I wanted to try out in media. As you know, there's so many different streams. So I had got my journalism degree. Then I worked in TV production, and then I was photography production a little bit. And then I wanted to work with a photo agency to see what that worked like. So I kind of was trying to figure out my niche of it. So then I worked with a photo agency called Wilson Wenzel. And again, worked with Mikael Janssen, who's, again, probably the top three right now of photographers in the world. And then I began to understand just luxury living. You know, Mr. Janssen would, on an average day, spend to show up on a shoot for 8 hours was like 150 grand. And that was before anything else came out of that. So you had me calling my dad in Shrewd, County Mayo, and walking for 40 blocks just to chat to him on an evening, talking about farming and grassroots stuff, to going in and billing a client for 250 grand for just one line, not including. So like his invoices were over a buck, over a million. So I was kind of in this world where I was like, this is so fake. And then that's why I moved to Philadelphia. I wanted to get out of it.
How do you tally those two, though? How do you move your head from dealing in millions for someone's day, mm-hmm, versus dealing in probably a million for everything that your family own, in some respects, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I guess the thing is I mean, I often thought about it. I think it's down to my upbringing. You know, I never, money just buys materialistic items. And it's more my gut feeling on how I felt about being around people with a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, I have some amazing friends out of it who have very, very nice salaries intake and they're living a most beautiful life, but their feet are very firmly on the ground. But the niche market that I was in there, they weren't. So that's why I was quick to get out. But you get lost, like anything, you get lost in it for a little while, and then you're like, okay, hang on, stall the digger, let's realign and figure out what we really want to do in life.
What I want to know kind of is how you don't get sucked into that, because obviously even if you're not the person who's pocketing the cash at the end of that transaction, you do get the additional and the kind of the reflected glory and the reflected kind of aura of being invited to these things. Even if you're there as the PA or you're there as kind of representative, you still get to go to some of these events. You get to be on set for these shoots. You get to see that world and kind of taste it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. But that was New York as a whole. You know, if you have money, and you can play a lot differently in New York. If you didn't, you just play differently. And I guess I never had it in my pocket to kind of get lost in it, but I'd never cared to do it. You know, I was very much all about having honest conversations, surrounding myself with people that I wanted to aspire to be rather than aspire to be in my bank account. And yeah, sure, money was great. And I guess that's kind of actually what I'm jumping a few steps ahead. I moved to Philadelphia because I wanted to get out of New York, and I wanted to push myself in other ways. Philadelphia came knocking and I came running. And then with the festival coming into my life, it kind of forced me to realign originally why I had gone out to New York. I wanted to tick a couple of boxes and really just... My grassroots stuff is so much more important. Honest conversations, real life dialogue with people was all a part of in a creative outlet. I didn't get that in New York. I didn't get that in the jobs that I was there. Philadelphia, I definitely did because I love the city.
For most people, their only knowledge of Philadelphia, or for Irish people anyway, is growing up hearing about Brian Frail and Philadelphia, Here I Come, and that whole thing.
Rocky Balboa and all those great things.
I went to see Creed the other day. Oh, it's a really good movie, and I never got up those steps, but I will at some point in my life climb those rocky steps. But their they're probably the only two cultural references that most Irish people would have to the city of Philadelphia. That and maybe the Tom Hanks movie as well. Mm-hmm. From your point of view, how did it differ from New York? Because Irish people have this conception of these people have gone to America, but America is a hugely different. Like you look at somewhere like a slum in, not a slum, but say a trailer park in New Mexico versus New York City versus Florida versus Seattle. They're very different. Mm-hmm. And hugely, vastly different and far away places in the States. How did those two, even though they're very close together, Philadelphia to New York is only, what, about an hour and a half?
Yeah,
2 hours?
Yeah, maybe max 2 hours. Yeah, there was... the funny thing with Philadelphia is I got accepted to do a job that I was underqualified to do.
Not necessarily the worst thing in the world.
No, not at all. But for whatever reason, my creative director... So I worked... I got offered a job with Beholden, which is a subsidiary company of Urban Outfitters Inc. So any of your listeners who might know our sister is Urban Outfitters. Then they have Anthropology, Beholden, which is their wedding line, Free People, which is a little bit more boho type girl, and then a garden type older, directed at older beautiful women called Terrain. And I got hired to be a shoot producer, so basically I coordinate all photography shoots. So I'd book your photographer, your model, your stylist, your retoucher, location. So I'd book a studio or on location, and we'd create beautiful images, and then I'd be the one responsible to make sure all the ins and outs happened. So that would be my job. And I guess, which again is another sector of what the term media means, but for me, when I moved to Philadelphia, I literally got hired on, I got official word on the Monday. I was down looking at apartments Friday evening, or no, I'm sorry, Saturday. I had no time because I had to start like the following Monday, or the Monday two weeks later, but I still had to work like double hours to make sure I was leaving Wilson Wenzel in a clear space. And of course, everything has to happen instantly in America. So,
they don't really do holidays.
No, they don't. So I basically lived, booked my first apartment, was turns out in the Gayborhood, which I didn't know, but I knew a couple of things.
We'll get to that in a while, but not the worst.
No. In long-term terms, it made sense. But it was like a block from the subway. I didn't know what the winters were like in New York. In Philadelphia. I did know what they were like in New York, but again, vastly different. You don't know what 2 hours is going to look like for snow or sun. So I said, okay, a block from the subway, Dunkin' Donuts was around the corner. So I was like, tick, tick, I know, tick, tick, I was grand. My brother helped me move down, and within a couple of hours I was a resident of Philadelphia, and I was starting, that was on the Saturday, I started on the Monday. I walked around the city for the first time after I'd moved there, signed my lease, did all of the big move. Bizarrely, our family mostly grew up in Boston, and that's where a lot of my aunts and uncles live, so that's like 6 hours from Philly. So a lot of my family were like, what do you mean you're moving further away? Why wouldn't you move to Boston? There's jobs here. But I always, again, wanted to take a chunk of a different city, and Philadelphia is the underdog on the East Coast, hence the reason why I love it.
Big time.
But it's such a cool city. It's very small, very walkable. Probably the downtown section is like one whole section of New York, so it's like very, very small. But there's old buildings. It's the first capital in America, so we have Independence Hall, and there's just so
Liberty
much history
Bell,
and
Love
yeah,
Park,
oh, great stuff. And yeah. Great spots. And I just kind of loved it, and it was so cool because a lot of like we've Temple University and U of Penn and a lot of great schools, and people would just become ingrained in easy living, and that's what it is. It's just easy living. But I did a lot of traveling to New York for shoots, so but I could be up in New York in 2 hours and back down again. It's like here from Dublin, but it was just different. It's a different culture, and they love the rough and ready, so it's like grimy, but it's cool. But a lot of people would, if you're in America on the East Coast, people are like, why would you move to Philadelphia? Because it goes block to block, whereas in New York, you know, certain areas are not as pleasant as others, whereas in Philly you could walk one block and find a couple $1 million homes. Next block could be what they say is like social housing, and that's kind of what I loved about it.
Most people don't like that. Most people, yeah. Most like, say 20 something Irish girls away from home on their own.
But sure, I played football, so we're grand.
Yeah, because that solves all the problems. Group of lads come up to you with
knives. I was
quarterback
and a fullback.
I play football, though. It's fine. What are you talking about? So, in Philadelphia...
Born and raised. Sorry, I had to go with it.
When in Rome or when in Philly. The the Irish Centre, obviously, you're playing, well, you're playing football in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. so you're involved in the Irish community at some level, at least in Philadelphia. When did the Irish Rose thing happen?
So I played with the Notre Dames. The summer I moved there, we won the North American final, which it was huge for the club. Pack of crazy women, which I even loved more because it was as if you were
normal.
But it was as if a club at home, and you had all these different accents and all these different perceptions of what football was. And for whatever reason, because I was maybe semi-fit at the time, they thought I was a decent footballer. So I was like, this place is the business. But that, I wanted to kind of ingrain myself more into the Irish community. I'd missed it a lot. I'd played football in New York too with Fermanagh ladies, but it was just different for me.
Yeah, it was Fermanagh though.
Yeah. If they're listening to this, I sincerely apologize. But for me, so I threw my name. I wanted to meet more young women in the city. And I only happened to be the one. A lot of Irish people, when they move to Philly, they live in the suburbs. If they're in construction or bars, they live out. Whereas for me, I was the only Irish person on URB in campus. And it's always nice to kind of keep your feet in the crack and the stories and just that Irish feel. So I threw my name into the hat for the Philly Rose in 2012. I had just been in the city for a couple of months. And I thought I did really well. I was really delighted with it. All my interviews but I didn't get selected. And I thought, great, well, it's off the bucket list, because it was something I always wanted to do. And I really wanted to represent Philadelphia because I loved it. And this girl called Elizabeth Smellman became our 2012 Rose, probably one of the dearest friends I still have. And I remember when she got selected, and a lot of people are like, oh, you must be disappointed. I was like, no, like, she's phenomenal. She was born and bred in Philly. She understood the Irish crack. She got it all. And she was just such a great person. I remember actually texting my older brother, Kevin, saying, I think I found your person. Like, this, we need
this.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
You want your brother to marry her?
Yeah, it was that great.
Did he?
He didn't. He did didn't. The love story didn't finish. No, they actually never met. Kevin started dating someone else. So, but you never know. Watch this space. No, I kid.
I'm sure her.
Yeah,
his girlfriend
her here on the Breffney Early Show.
Is his girlfriend right now? Yeah. It's kind of going, Maria.
But it just goes to show, like, what kind of person she was just such a great person. So then it was off my bucket list, and I was like, okay, I achieved it. I did exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to meet like-minded women within the Irish community. And there was six of us that year, and I met five great friends, and I was like delighted. Knew the Irish community more, so I could walk into events and not feel uncomfortable, and I just would know somebody.
You know faces and names. Yeah.
And then got on very well in Philly with Beholden. Moved into anthropology role. They moved me in as a studio manager because they wanted to clean up a lot of the stuff that wasn't making them money. So I got the nod to go in. My boss at the time very kindly said to me in an interview. He was like, Maria, I go, well, what do you need, Trevor? Like, what is it that you need in the studio that you're lacking? And he goes, I need someone who can tell people to F off, but with a smile. So then they show up to work the next day, but they know they're in trouble. And I go, yeah, I think I could do that. And he goes, yeah, when I thought that, he goes, you're the only person I thought with an Irish accent could get away with something like this. And I go, great. So that happened. But then simultaneously, Philadelphia Rose Center called me one day and said, hey, so the Rose Center's back on again. You've been in the city for a little bit longer. You understand it more. You're able to talk about it more. Would you be interested? And I go, no, it's off my bucket list, but I'll show up in the night and I'll support you. Like, whatever I can do, selling tickets, right? I sell tickets and do whatever. And he goes, Karen Conahan was like, no, like, we need numbers. Maria, I'm telling you probably won't get selected because we have a really strong group of girls this year. And I go, okay, so there's no chance I'll get selected. And he's like, no. And I go, great. Well, if it's for number fill, no problem. That's my duty, my call to duty, call to action. I'll help you fill numbers. And I didn't tell anybody I was going into the Philly Rose selection for 2014. I think I texted my mom saying I'm thinking about it, but never gave her a firm yes or no. Didn't tell anybody else. Didn't tell anybody I was working with. Put a guna on or walked in on my own, because at that point I would have known a good few people. And then I got selected. And the MC goes, like, classic, the MC goes, so who's with you tonight? And I go,
nobody.
In all true Paul Mawson style, I go, well, you know, when you're a room full of Irish, we're all friends.
You did not.
I did. I Paul Mawson the bejesus out of it. And he goes, no, really, who's with you? And I go, just next question, please. And then after that, I...
So do you think you got selected maybe because you felt absolutely no pressure and you could just...
Maybe that too. But I didn't feel... See, I never feel pressure because I would have been... No Name Club is a youth organization that runs on hosts and hostesses. And I was in there from junior cert to leaving cert, would have served as an adult member. And it's like a small rose of tree. So I would have done all of that when I was younger. And what is there to lie about when it's your own story? So it was kind of a case of... I was never... under pressure. I wanted to do it in 2012 because I wanted to represent the city, but it makes perfect sense that I represented in 2014 because I did understand the city more, most importantly too, I understood me more, so I could talk about my stories a lot better, but yeah, so I finished that crown and sash, sat in my car that I had borrowed from a friend that I said I was going to IKEA to pick up bits. Try to call my brother in LA. He didn't pick up. I couldn't call home because it was in the middle of the night. Sent a text to my mother. Was like, so we're going, we're a rose now. And then went to McDonald's for a drive-thru because in my head, I feel anything that I achieve, I need to keep my feet on the ground physically. So I eat fast food as a reward.
My question is, the only food you mentioned so far is Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's. No, was this a staple for you? Because obviously you're in good shape. So how are you still in shape with McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts?
They're only as treats. Okay. Dunkin' Donuts, if someone appeared here with a medium coffee, cream, two sugars, I'd be like, we could probably get married, regardless whether you're a boy or girl. If you brought me Dunkin' Donuts, I'd be very happy. Don't quote me on that.
No, just you've just put it on the record. Yeah. It's fine. I think you might have deliveries of Dunkin' Donuts here for the next.
But I laughed because when I pulled into McDonald's in the not so nice of areas in Philadelphia, I pulled in drive through and like had a crown on my head for the crack, and I go, "Hell yeah, can I get a quarter pound meal with cheese?" And he was like, "What drink would you like?" And I go, "Oh, I'll take water." And he goes, "I'm sorry, what?" And I'm delighted with myself. I have this big crown on my head, stuck my head out the window, and he didn't even bat an eyelid. He didn't even ask. And that just goes to show you, Philadelphia, anything is possible.
He didn't even ask you where you were coming from or what you were wearing.
No. And he's like, "What did you say?" I go, "Water." And he goes, "Okay, next window." And I was like, oh, let down. So then I went to bed, and the next morning, my phone was kind of blown up. But it was great.
That's pretty awesome.
So I celebrated with myself and me McDonald's.
So when you qualify for in Philadelphia, you're automatically through to the Dome, right?
No, you come home. The regional festival, which is gone now.
It's in Port Leash, right?
Yeah, the regional festival is in Port Leash, and they've been doing it for the last 8 years. So about 60 roses would come to Port Leash, and out of 60, 23 would get selected. And those 23 would go to the Dome, along with like Cork, Kerry, Dublin, because their selections would be so much larger, and the Australias, so that would make up your 32. So I would have had to, I got selected early April, flew home over the May bank holiday, got selected out of that 23 and carried on.
But I'm
who would have thought?
I know, well, you didn't think so yourself.
No.
But I'm guessing that the whole media attention, because it is a bit of a circus for the week or so of the festival, but given your background of being in the various fashion brands and being on photo shoots and being around the media, I'm guessing you probably would have been much more comfortable with that than most of the other girls.
Yeah, I guess, you know what, it's kind of nerve-wracking. If you're not used to high-intensity moments, the festival can sometimes be tough, even when you're with a corrective group. But like, you have to understand, we usually have hair and makeup is on our faces and dressed by 7:38, and we don't stop going.
You mean that's not normal for you?
No, I have no makeup on right now. He's trying to take a jab at me right now. Whatever. And you keep going until, 1 o'clock at night. And you have to remember, like, we're on buses, off buses. We're walking into rooms of a couple hundred people. We're walking into tents of like thousands of people. So it's very extreme, very fast, and a very short. But because I'd worked in the most craziest of world with creative directors asking me to run after sheep in a field and kick them back into the courtyard area because it would make a pretty shot. Like all of those.
You go around kicking sheep. Is that what you... Have you just admitted to animal cruelty?
No.
Are we going to have to edit that out?
I support the animals. I live on a farm. Anyways, you're trying to get me in trouble. But I worked in an environment where it was so extreme of like requests, the craziest, most stupid requests. So anything the festival threw at me, I was like, oh shit, this is grand. Like, you know, they're not going to lose us. We have to show up eventually. And my whole thing was, whoever I was last, I wanted people to meet whoever I was last year, last month, today, next month, next year. It'd be the core values would be very much the same, and obviously experiences mold and shape you very differently, but the core values of myself has always. So I went into the festival like, sure, we're here for the crack. I remember sitting in front of my boss when I went to the international festival and I said, Chris, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And he goes, Maria, I think you might win this. Quote unquote, I go, in no disrespect, Chris, but you don't know what the beep you're talking about. I grew up the festival. I know what they want. They don't want me.
So what's going through your mind on the last night in the dome? Dahi is listing out who sponsors or whatever, and they're about to announce the winner. What's going through your mind? Are you thinking about the flight home? Were you thinking about...
Yeah, I was thinking of all the to-dos because I kind of had gone off email for the weekend, and Monday and Tuesday is a really busy time in the studio, and I knew I was trying to keep my eyes on emails coming through to make sure because I supported a team of 35 and like photographer styles, retouchers, and a lot of things.
When you say support, you were the boss, basically.
Yeah, and a lot of, and I worked with a lot, I kind of mingled myself into a lot of, my relationships with cross-functional partners, like were merchandise style, like all of that was very important and made a lot of things tick over. So, and I loved my job. So as I'm standing on stage, and I was half laughing because Dahi went through the queue of us and was like throwing out little snippets of all. And he came to me and he was like, oh, and she loves Murder, She Wrote, which I do, right?
Murder, She Wrote's awesome.
Oh, I love Murder, She Wrote. Angela Lansbury speaking in Dublin next month.
She lives in Cork.
She's speaking in Dublin next month. We're going. Completely off topic. And I remember just standing there clapping, and I was 31 out of 32 to go on stage. So I was the second night. And I remember just standing there clapping and looking around. I was like, Jesus, this is great crack. And I went through the list of girls I was looking at, and I was like, she'd be great. Oh, she'd be great. Oh, feck it. No, she'd be great. Damn it. I don't know who to call. And I'm clapping, clapping, clapping. And you're just taking in all these noises. And then you hear, representing Philadelphia. And I go, sure, she'd be great. Right? Not even realizing. And then the instant moment where it hit, I was like, my boss is going to beep in. Kill me. And that was the first thing I thought, oh my god, what am I gonna do with work? Because I was on the roll to, like, my plan for 2-3 years after, you know, when I got in there, was to become director. Like, I was on a fast pace to trying to get within
get
the company
ahead, yeah.
And I was like, oh god, how am I gonna make these two work?
It's like maternity leave.
I was like, oh, and all I kept saying is, and I'm so surprised, like, before I went out on stage to do my interview, my original interview with them, are the commercial manager, Steve Cronley, who I became great friends with, obviously, because he was my right-hand man for the festival. He grabbed me. He goes, don't swear on stage, will she? Speak slow, but don't effing swear. And I go, I'm not going to effing swear. Why the hell would I effing swear on national television? He goes, well, she, don't. And I went out.
Did you?
And I went out, did my interview, it came off, and I said to the floor manager, did I swear? And he goes, no, I don't think so. I was like, thanks, beautiful.
You just read.
Sorry. And that's all I kept saying in my head. I'm surprised people couldn't make out what I was saying with my mouth. I was like,
yeah, she just mouthed something.
Yeah.
For the listeners who can't see her, it's not a video again.
Right? Yeah.
I know you're used to TV and all that. So let's not dwell on the Rose Tree, because that's been documented mm-hmm. so many different places. I do have one question for you, and it's to do with, I suppose, the big secret or the big reveal, which to anyone who knew you was
me
the
being
work.
A pioneer.
Yes, totally. You being a pioneer. No, I'm talking about your sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I love how people say that, because you know how you just slightly whispered there, your sexual orientation.
Did I?
Yeah. And it's funny. It's just a program we do. We and that's why when I talk to schools, I'm like, so if anybody knew, I'm gay. Because if we make fun of the way our brains are programmed, then we might change it. But anyways, go on, sorry.
So you are a gay woman.
He struggled in that.
I didn't struggle too much with that one. But this was known to anybody who knew you in any context. Like, for mm-hmm. example, our paths did cross before you became even the Philadelphia Rose mm-hmm. when I met you through your girlfriend at the time. So this mm-hmm. was not a secret to anybody who actually knew you.
No, not at all. No.
But the organizers weren't aware of it.
Yeah, it was something that, you know, you're in a bubble talking about, you have to understand, like, I joke about my sexuality with family and friends. And I certainly,
I know your dad is very
brilliant. Yeah, I know. And I certainly didn't hide it from, actually didn't hide it from anybody at all. But like, I would introduce myself as a pioneer long before I would introduce myself as being gay, because I made a conscious decision to become a pioneer. Gay is just who I am. So when you're on the Rose Tree, much to what people believe and disbelieve, there's a lovely negative stigma towards us lovely ladies. We're talking about healthcare issues, we're talking about educational values, we're talking about alcohol problems within our society. Will Hillary win presidential election? We don't know. Like, there was a lot of heavy topics with great content and great debate, and sexuality simply wasn't one of them. The fact that I was single through the festival, so I almost slip into this world of asexuality where I have no interest in anybody, so it wouldn't be at the forefront of my brain.
So basically you were asked the question, do you have a boyfriend, and you said no.
Actually, I never got asked that.
Okay.
No,
so it wasn't, you didn't go out of your way to hide anything, it just didn't come up in conversation. What was the reaction from the festival when they found out?
Yeah, so we got a call from the Sun newspaper. They'd asked me, like, we had heard about this, we want to make a story, but it's going to be positive. And my initial reaction was like, yeah, we can talk about it, but you're going to identify a number of different things that I identify with as a person, because there's a lot more to anybody's sexuality than just their sexuality. And then I asked for all the management committee to sit around a table and talk to me, which is pretty ballsy considering, like, I was in the hot seat for like all of 5 seconds. So I sat there and my initial reaction was, we live in a Catholic country. Please make note and contact our corporate sponsors, because obviously we need to A, warn them that an article might come out, and B, how, you know, if because they're promoting, they're financially supporting a festival that now I'm an ambassador. So then that shifts from being a lovely lady to being a lovely lady with a business attitude. So that's kind of how that moved. And I just opened the floor and basically, please, if you have questions, you have to ask me. Here's my story. So it was a very safe environment. And they were delighted. They were like, to be honest with you, Maria, it's part of your identity. We don't discriminate. We have a number of gay people working with us. I'm sure you're not the first gay rose, but we just don't know about it. You know, and they were very nonchalant about it. And then fortunately for us, the media likened us and we became a great success story because of it.
Obviously, the year that you were the Rose was also the year where gay marriage became a thing in Ireland, and the huge campaign, the Home to Vote campaign, just the whole country seemed to rally behind it. I know my constituency, although I wasn't at home at the time, but my constituency was the only one out of, I think, 30 or 40 constituencies in the country to vote no. And even that was only by 1 or 2%. Mm. So overall, it for want of a better word, normalized and made equal both sides of that equation, which up to then there had been a huge stigma around it. Do you feel that that's changed in the last 12 months?
I think we have a lot more work to do. And by we, I mean both homosexual and heterosexual people. I think the reason why it was so overwhelmingly yes in most counties. I know yourselves and Roscommon struggle just a little bit, but a lot of that's down to education, you know.
I think a lot of it's down to the age profile of the areas as well.
Yeah, and you know what, on a completely different side note, but just because we reference it, I would hope the same age demographic, younger people, make themselves known in the upcoming general election, because, you know, we can't become newsworthy things, and we can't. The referendum was won due to a young vote, but then we were putting leaders in positions that we might not like, and us young people can affect that greatly. So I would hope
will
that
everyone on the ballot paper.
Oh, will
have
I
you been asked? Have you been voting? Asked to go?
I have been asked in a very humorous way. Yeah. Never say never. I'd never take it off, but certainly not tomorrow. That's not going to happen. I want to kind of educate myself around the players and the shapes and what I really want to stand for. But no, I definitely wouldn't take it off. Your original question was...
I got you distracted with thoughts of...
Yeah, marriage referendum. No, I think we do have an awful lot of education. I think given, you know, some people believe I didn't do enough with my public
appearance. You were in a very, very awkward position because of your role as an apolitical ambassador for a festival. But
you know me. I always take the grey area in a lot of things, so I definitely pushed the boat out.
But I think whether you verbally said anything or not, you were very much part of that debate through other people's discussions.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that people were able to reference the fact that, well, should the Rose of Tralee is gay now, that's standard. There's no issue with that. Why should there be any issue with this? And I think whether you actually verbalized that or not, it was part of the discussion.
Yeah. And
which I'm sure you were very aware of.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people... You know, it's now because obviously my year ended, so you have a little bit more open talk back, and some people were unhappy with my use of my public role, but a lot of people don't know is I've probably visited over 100 schools throughout the country, promoting equality, promoting pioneerism, promoting volunteerism, promoting the festival. So I didn't need to be or have to be on the front of the newspaper every day, all day, about the marriage referendum. I was doing a lot of plant seeding in other corners of the county and the country. But you also have to understand, like, I became very transparent, which I am in all things, opened up my sexuality, probably hit a number of front news. I mean, my Rosa Tralee Gay was on the banner of the RT News, which is hilarious. So my sexuality was very, very heightened. And yeah, and I offered conversation home, which is what I wanted to do. I mean, I appeared on The Late Late Show, the first hot seat with Ryan Tubbs, and we talked about my sexuality, and my whole goal was, if I can help one person feel a little bit more comfortable in their own skin, I had achieved everything I wanted to achieve that year. And yeah, indirectly, perhaps I did a lot more than what people would like to give me credit for, but I'm happy. I go to bed okay at night.
Sleep at night. Yeah. In terms of your journey so far through sports, through the US trips, through the Rosa Tralee and the future, what's the major advice that you would give to people who want to maybe follow in those footsteps or kind of look up to you and want to do something as groundbreaking, for want of a better word, as what you've
done? I think now we live in such a great society that there's not just one or two inspiring people in our society anymore. I mean, people like you, you're inspirational with all the work that you've done. Some people think I'm inspirational with all the work I did, but like, we're still searching, we're still trimming, we're still trying to figure out this transition.
I don't
transition.
Feel too inspirational when I'm like trying to get out of bed at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, likewise. But we're in this transition and we're trying to figure out our next things. And I think that's so important to kind of highlight. You constantly transition. You go from high school, like secondary school, to college to your first job to your next job. And then something like the Rosa Tralee happens or whatever's happening in your community. And I think you have to be appreciative. And it absolutely sucks sometimes, transition periods. I mean, I'm in one now and it's kicking my ass a little bit because I'm trying to, I want to wake up in the morning and know exactly what I want to do with my life, but you can't because you have to do, you know, you have to try a number of different things. And that's why I kept saying throughout this chat with you is like, media is one umbrella. And under media, I worked in production for TV. I worked in production for photography. I worked with the studio. I worked with an agency. I was front of camera, but most of my experience lies behind camera. So under that realm, there's so many different things to try. So even if you went into nursing or construction or fireman, or within all of those categories, there's a number of different things. So don't, you have to kind of, trial and error is the only way you're going to figure that out, you know?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure we're not going to see a nursing or construction or farming anytime soon.
You never know.
What does the future hold for you? Like, tell me a little bit about what your day looks like, an average day, although you probably don't have what most people would consider an average day, but what's a typical day or a week for you from Real Rosa these days?
See, post-festival now, I'm kind of in a weird place because I'm used to going at 120 miles an hour and now I'm kind of in around 60 or 80, which I don't like because I don't like, I feel
it's
complacent.
Probably still more than most people do. You are fully aware of that.
No, but like, see, a lot of people think the festival is just, oh, you show up in a lovely dress and you smile and you do all those things. But you have to understand each and every year looks very different. As the 2014 International Rose Tree, from August when I was crowned to January, I was doing my 5 days in Philly and my weekends in Ireland religiously. I was at my desk most mornings when I'm in Philly at 6 a.m. to do radio calls or interviews or whatever needed to happen. I traveled internationally as much as I could to raise the profile of the festival. 32 county tour in 2 weeks. My aim and my objective was to make sure every young girl and boy knew about the festival. Any volunteers that I worked with in any like Hope Foundation or Mellon Educate or 80 Roaches Chernobyl stepped away knowing, God, that festival is a great, wholesome festival. And that doesn't come because you show up in a nice dress and you smile. Like, that's an awful lot of work. And I don't think the festival gets enough credit from people. And we all take jabs at different things, but the roses that are in positions, even the ones that are non-international rose, any of the roses and escorts that support her each and every year, they work phenomenally hard at raising empowerment, inspiring women, community-based as well as within our diaspora. So now I'm kind of trying to figure out my realm of that. And right now my average day looks like if I'm not in Dublin doing meetings, trying to push strategy into helping businesses. I'm helping out with the Fells Point, building the dome structure. It's going to be a multi-purpose building. How can we make that look like? So I'm pitching a lot of things for them with Fulch Ireland and Tourism Ireland and trying to get my head in all of that. Trying to get experience as MC and keynote speaker because it makes you a better broadcast potentially. You constantly pitching new ideas. So like I could have 5 ideas and they could get turned down and then a week later I have to pitch again completely different ideas. So it's like you're constantly lost in this creative world.
When you say pitching ideas to production houses?
Mm-hmm. Production houses and broadcasters. Every meeting you sit into, someone goes away with a little more piece of you. So you're trying to be selfful enough to make sure you're re-energizing yourself before all of those things. I'm traveling the length and breadth of the country. Just anything young people related, I usually put my hand to. Cycling on Suicide, it was co-presented with them in the RDS and a huge event, 4,000 people, that like, but you have to do a lot of prep for that. So like, there's a lot of different things moving and shaking. Outside of that, I'm trying to start a business because my business brain needs to keep moving.
Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I'm looking at weddings and events, production coordinating, because that's my backing, but I think the market's so saturated, so how can I make it different but keep it in my realm?
Well, to be fair, like, you probably won't appreciate this because you're very modest about your own profile and your own ability and your own likability at times, but someone like you entering the market, you have a certain head start over even established people who aren't maybe at the top end of that market, because you have those contacts, you have those relationships in the production houses and in the broadcasters to get yourself that profile. Mm-hmm. And people know you. People know your name once they hear it.
Yeah, and that's very sweet of you to say. For sure, but then anything I tie myself to creatively, I just want to make sure it's pretty sweet. And I think I'm going to do the wedding and events to get to obviously build a successful career in that, but also get a taste for how productions run in Ireland, because I would have been away for 6 years. So Ireland is a very different marketplace annually, never mind over nearly a decade. But the aim of the game then is to pull more US markets, more fashion brands, photographers to shoot in our beautiful little nation that we have. But I need to tick a couple of boxes before I get to pitching like that. So that's an idea.
Based on the figures you're talking about paying for the photographer, the idea of flying them to Ireland for a day.
No, they pay for themselves. You have fashion brands. So J. Crew would have just recently shot here in Ireland.
I mean the brand, the amount of money they invest in a shoot, relocating that to Ireland or anywhere else on the planet, really, the cost of flights and travels and stuff, it doesn't really seem that big when you compare it to the daily rate of, say, and the photographer. Mm-hmm. So that's a very realistic goal and a very realistic prospect. And I suppose even if you're getting a slice off that and you're doing one a month, it's a healthy enough living to live in the beautiful Shrule.
The aim of the game is, like, I heard a great term quite recently, portfolio career. So you have your fingers in a couple of different pots. I mean, you're figuring out your stuff
I'm pretty familiar with that as well.
Yeah, so like, and I think it's great because like everything is a sustainable cycle and everything links to everything else. So I'm just trying to figure out, again, like I said earlier, figure out what makes sense, what doesn't, what my gut's liking. And really every day I wake up and saying, okay, what do I want to do with the rest of my life and how that changes? I don't know. We'll see what happens, because Ireland, as beautiful as it is also expensive. So I need to figure out the ins and outs of financially supporting myself. And all these conversations all about it being a smart person, never mind a smart woman or smart man, but just a smart person. And but I have a lot of fulfilling other small projects. I'm going to talk in my community in 2 weeks' time at the 4 masses that we have. Shrule and Glencarba is our parish. The parish priest invited me in to talk about my rosier and post it. So you have a lot of wholesome projects like that that make getting up in the morning really, really easy.
In terms
running, not so much, but yeah. Well-being is another goal of actually 2016.
In terms of well-being, because I'm getting big into this myself, mm-hmm. and so I've started, say, meditation and that sort of stuff, and it's helping me sleep at night, which then helps me function during the day. How do you work on your well-being, or what do you do? What steps do you take?
I'm kind of not so great at it right now, hence the reason 2016 is all about well-being. I came off Rosier doing Trek to Tralee, that you joined.
Tell me about that.
I'm so grateful that you joined me a number of times. So it was 4-day, cycled from Shrule, County Mayo to Tralee, County Kerry. It was a great event, raising the profile of 3 great charities, Bardstown, Donal Walsh Live Life, and Development Perspectives. And all about was, as individuals, we have such amazing opportunity to empower a community. And community can be yourself, can be the community you live in, can be your family, your friends, your workplace, can be the nation, go big or go home. But I realized post-festival, like, I wasn't really focusing on me and trying to, you know, you give so much of yourself all the time, and then it's like the tank's the engine is empty, and how do you fill that again? And that's what I'm trying to figure out. So whether it be trying to get back out running, eating healthy, feeling my body properly, I really want to try meditation. I really want to
Headspace. I heard about Headspace. I cannot recommend that highly enough.
You know what the worst thing is? I think I downloaded it and I've never tried it.
Try it. It's free for the first 10 episodes. You never really have to go much further past that. You just repeat them. But you can pay a small subscription and get full and better meditations. But Headspace, top notch. Can't recommend it highly enough. In terms of the festival, I think the Rosa Tree is an Irish... It's just a stable. It's like the Eurovision. Everyone loves to hate it, but actually kind of secretly kind of likes it. And wouldn't know what to do with their summer if it wasn't there. It's like Christmas, Eurovision, Rosa Tree. Yeah. They're kind of the three main... They break the year up into kind of thirds. But the Rosa Tree is something that people... sometimes have a very negative take on. I'm thinking back to like Father Ted and the Lovely Girls competition. It's an obvious rip-off of the Rosa Tree and a kind of a hat tip to it. But what do you say to people who would come out and say, oh, it's chauvinistic, it's totally taking advantage of these girls, it's just, it's who's the prettiest, blah, blah, blah. And these things get trolleyed out every year in the media. What's your...
Yeah, like a lot of people ask me, how can you call yourself a feminist if you were in a beauty pageant? Or how can you call yourself a strategic businesswoman that inspires people when you allow yourself to be paraded on stage? Like, all of those are not new things to me. I've heard them quite often. The Father Tedism jokes are bloody hilarious, but at some point you're like, all right, we get it. They're lovely bottoms. Yeah. which is really funny.
That was a quote on Father Ted. Yeah. I wasn't asking you if you have a lovely bottom.
Which is really funny. I'm sitting down, folks. Don't worry. It's really funny when you're trying to explain the Father Ted is a lovely bottom joke to
foreigners.
Your Australian counterparts who were like, what? Like, why do they say I have a lovely bottom? So that always like makes you laugh. But no, for me, it's... You can't knock it till you try it. You have to get down to the festival, then you understand a lot more.
I did have that honor this year. And because it was kind of weird. I went down, we made the trek with you down to Tralee, about a group of 7, 8 or 9 of us, and it was a fantastic trip. And I stayed around for a few days. And we saw you intermittently, but you were rushed off doing other bits and pieces. We kind of understood that. But there was a gang of us floating around. We got to see the actual festival. Because in my mind, the Rose of Tralee was 3 hours on television. For 2 nights. Yeah. That was it. But it's so much more than that. It's basically 6 or 7 days where the whole town gets taken over by musicians and dancers and just a festival.
Yeah, arts are a huge thing down in Tralee. Like theatre in the parks for kids. Dare I say, I think I skydived into the town park. Like these crazy things.
I have to hold my hand up and say I apologise for missing that.
That's all right.
But it was the weather. We were out and we got soaked.
Lying. But
I was with your brother. He can back me up on this.
I laughed because as we're flying down, well, it was like we free flew in through a cloud. So we're getting like there was a little tiny shots coming at you of rain, and then as we're like sitting waiting to like parachute down, you just have people running from the streets. It looked like hundreds of people just running from the main town, like under trees into Seagus land, but they looked drenched.
Oh yeah, we were like drowned rats. Yeah. There was a gang of 6 or 7 of us. Your brother was one of them, and a few of the other Trek to Tralee crew, and we stood there for maybe half an hour when you were due to land the first time. And obviously then we went and said, okay, it's not going to happen. It was called off. We went for food and we literally ordered when somebody got a message saying, oh, she's jumped.
Yeah,
she just jumped.
A lot of confusion.
And we looked at each other. And I'm not going to lie. We had that moment where we're like, oh, do we really want to go out and get wet again? Pretty sure we've seen people jump in parachutes before. Eh, we know she did it. It's fine.
Yeah, she landed.
And we sat and we had our dinner in Fells Point. But yeah, no, so...
But a lot of like, I mean, swinging back to your original question, like a lot of people don't know it's more than 2 nights on TV. A lot of people don't know what actually makes a rose, what people don't know that it's a 60 roses on average from all across our diaspora represent the Irish communities. We're a very, very strong country. To know that we have such great connections right across the world. A small part of that, which makes up the bigger picture, is our escorts who live and breathe the festival as much as we do. Then you have your families, then you have your average punters, then you have like a bunch of people coming down just because they think the festival could be cool or might not be. Then you have a group of negative naysayers are like, oh, we're just going to go down and see it's actually not that great, and then fall in love with it. And then you have the townspeople, like over 200,000 people come each year, and there's a reason why they do it. It generates probably close to 7 million for the town of Tralee over those couple of days. I was told, given all our media for the 2014-2015 year, we generated 2.5 million of ad space, and that means we were read about, we were talked about, and that's not online, that's just print. So we are, you know, and people ask then,
it's absolutely huge.
Yeah, and then people think like, oh, you're doing it to service or you're anti-feminist. Like, I'm talking numbers here. I'm not talking like, oh, it was great to stand. Like, big things for me were schools, young people promoting my story and promoting the festival through it, being a smart businesswoman to ensure that the festival is growing each and every year.
You mentioned a figure of 2,000 bodies in the streets of Tralee, 200,000 bodies in the streets of Tralee. This year, for the first time ever, the Rose Ball sold out months ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. I know I couldn't get a ticket. I tried to get one the week of it. Thank you for that, by the way.
I couldn't.
It's fine. I won't hold it against you. I promise you. But
dare I say, to even add to this, I was like, if I could move someone to my seat, Breffni could sit at this table.
Yeah, you can
because
say that to me.
Because I had eaten before, because when you're at the ball, you work you're promoting the festival through tables. So I was like, I technically don't need a seat. But I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I won't hold
But you did say I have a lovely bottom, so it's great. No, I don't.
Sorry, that sounds really bad. I don't know which way I'm going to come off on the end of that one. But my point is that there seemed to be a little bit extra about the festival this year. And you talked about the amount of time and effort that you put into promoting. And I think a lot of credit from the town of Tralee should... I hope they've made you an honorary citizen at this stage, giving you a bit of freedom.
The only place I got freedom of was Cong. So I can tend to my ducks on green pastures.
Was that with Ryan Tuberty? Yeah. Okay, so yeah. Yourself and Ryan.
But no, Tralee... See, it's funny with the festival. Kerry and Tralee people in particular claim you very differently. So when I go back and I visit, it's like, welcome home. You know, it's a very...
Do you still have to pay for your hotel room, though? That's the question.
Oh, sure. It depends on who's buying reception. No, I kid. No, but you're always proud to be back, and they're always proud to have you. It's a very beautiful, beautiful relationship that you do end up having with the towns, actually.
Okay. I normally finish up the episode on the
You're
podcast.
You're listening to the Breffni Early Show. Sorry, I had to get it.
Well, it took you about 26 takes to get the first version of it. But no, I normally finish up the show by asking a very simple question. The people who are listening to this podcast, what can they do for you?
What can they do for me? What can they do for me? You know, we all have crazy, busy, chaotic, transitional phases in our life. And I think our young people need to hear more of that. So whatever your story is, get more involved in your community, I got a text last night from one of the community goers in Shrew who said, Maria, are you around? We're the community's doing an operation transformation weekly walk. Can you join us at any point? I think it would boost people. I said, yes. I'm speaking in my community in Shrew next 2 weekends time at Mass to predominantly young people. I'll go back to my school. There's so much more that we can be doing just to show our proud stories and be really proud of where you've come from, you know, and all the different things that you align yourself with. I mean, a lot of people might not feel comfortable about me talking about my sexuality, but I leave a lot of conversations with, I hope I would leave a lot of people thinking, wow, she's a nice person versus she's only gay person, or they know more about the Pioneer. Yeah. They know more about the Pioneer Association because of me. They know more about how proud I am to be a farmer because of, like, there's all these different things that people leave stories with, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Maria Walsh, as ever, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Best of luck in everything you do, whatever that might be.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to watch the space for you. I think it's going to be a really, really great 2016.
Likewise.
The Breffni Early Show. Hey!